Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
It's just a public service announcement.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho, O, H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you can call me CEO of the R-O-C. Ho, fresh out the frying pan into the fire. I be the music biz number one supplier. Fly it in a piece of paper bearing my name. Got the hottest chick in the game wearing my chain. That's right, ho, not D-O-C.
There are a lot of ways you could peg Jay-Z. Hip-hop billionaire royalty for the better part of 30 years. Or, hey, how about Mr. Knowles? Or how about the young drug dealer turned entrepreneur turned rap superstar? Well, how about master American poet, right up there with Walt Whitman, Langston Hughes, or Robert Frost, an American lyricist who captures the nation's sometimes shameless, always brash urge to hustle. Well, this hour on Point, Jay-Z's America. And you can join us. Is Jay-Z an American lyricist? What poetry do you hear in his verses? What Jay-Z song really resonates with you and why? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also join us anytime online at Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, we're having this conversation today because of Professor Michael Eric Dyson. He's a sociology professor at Georgetown University. He teaches a course on Jay-Z, and he has a new book out called Jay-Z, Made in America. And he joins us from Washington. Professor Dyson, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me. I admire your show and love what you do.
It's a great pleasure to have you. I have to say, first of all, the idea that Jay-Z is 50 kind of blows my mind to begin with.
It is kind of mind-blowing. I mean, how did you and I remain the same age and he got older?
I have no idea. All I know is that it has happened and here we are. So why did you want to, I mean, you've been teaching this course about Jay-Z. Why did you want to write this book and bring your thoughts about Jay-Z's sort of place in history and American culture to a broader audience?
If for no other reason than to have this conversation with you today, it's been all worth it. But to be able to have this kind of conversation with millions of more people who are invested in a serious deconstruction of his lyrics, arguments over his place in the hip-hop pantheon, talking about his subsequent development as a human being, reflecting on his own path from toxic masculinity to heroic reflection about masculinity and its limits, and to talk about that music, those lyrics, those great ideas, those verses, that verbal imagination, that rhetorical genius that sparks so many reflections and meditations and commentaries. So, you know, he's turning 50. He's turned 50. He's been performing for about 30 years. Hip Hop Above Ground is about 40 years old. Mm-hmm. So I thought this trio of anniversaries would provoke a serious conversation about Jay-Z, one of the greatest lyricists the genre has produced.
So let's start first with one of the common criticisms of Jay-Z. Lots of people say he's surface level, and you say no.
No. If you think Jay-Z is surface level, I hate to say it, you're being surface level. you know, he says in one of his songs, do you people just skim music or do you actually read it, understand it? Do you listen? And he's absolutely right. I think that was on the moment of clarity. And a lot of people skim it. They see what's upon the surface, but they don't dig deeper into the cavernous reaches of his imagination. On some of the B-sides, which are beyond the partying and the bacchanalia, though even in some of those songs, he manages to slip in some political commentary, some deep philosophical reflection about the nature of life. So to argue that Jay-Z is surface is to argue that Robert Frost is a simplistic poet. What is he doing writing poet? Why is it such a great poem? Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. What's deep about that? a guy on, you know, with a horse stopping by the woods on a frozen, you know, lake. But there are such deep meanings beneath it, the substrata of the poem, the conventions that are being both accessed and avoided, or at least challenged, the simplicity of the exterior, the placidity of the surface, and the profound chaos that it masks. So if we can acknowledge that Robert Frost looks real simple, but has a lot of deep stuff, we've got to acknowledge that about Jay-Z as well.
All right, so let's deconstruct some Jay-Z here a little bit more. Let's listen to a track off of his 1996 album, Reasonable Doubt. This is Can I Live?
Can I live? Can I live? My mind is infested with sick thoughts that circle like a Lexus. If driven wrong, it's sure to hurt you. Through level like duplexes. In unity, my crew and me commit atrocities like we got immunity. You guessed it. Manifested intangible goods. Platinum Rolexed it. We don't lease, we buy the whole car. As you should. My confederation. Detonation. Explode on detonation. Overload the mind of the said patient. When it boils the steam, it comes to it. We all fiends gotta do it. Even righteous minds go through this. True this. The street school us to spend our money foolish. Bomb with jewelers and watch for intruders. I stepped it up another level, meditated like a Buddhist. Recruited lieutenants with ludicrous dreams of getting cream, let's do this. It gets tedious, so I keep one eye open like CBS. You see me stressed, right? Can I live?
Can I live? Jay-Z, 1996, so... Mm. Talk to me about the metaphors and the lyrical construction you hear there.
I mean, my mind is infested with sick thoughts. All right. So we know that already we're starting with that metaphorical intensity. And subsequently in hip hop, sick means great. Oh, that's a sick beat. That means it's hot. It's fresh. Right. But a sick thoughts that circle like a Lexus, right? Mm. The car that he was known to be driving at that particular point, one of the hottest luxury cars available then in, 1996. If driven wrong, it's sure to hurt you. Dual level like duplexes. In unity, my crew and me, right? So duplexes, you know, separate on one side versus the other, and yet you are unified in one building there, commit atrocities like we got immunity. Like we worked out a deal with the criminal justice system to be able to do what we do because we've been granted immunity for our testimony. You guessed it, right? The testimony manifested intangible goods, platinum Rolexed it. We don't lease. Mm. We buy the whole car. So time and again, he's just making use of metaphors to try to paint his picture, to tell his truth, and to talk about what's going on. My consideration dead, a nation explode. On detonation, overload the mind of a said patient. I mean, he's coming at you with so many metaphors. Like, density of metaphoricity is characteristic of Jay-Z at this level. And then, when you think about it, it's his first album. He's making, you know, serious music to reflect on his situation and his circumstances. And at the same time, he's trying to talk about the condition, the plight and predicament of a hustler in the street.
Yeah.
And those who are gathered there to try to figure out what they're doing. So, you know, again, here you've got poetic convention, rhetorical manipulation, metaphoric intensity, all in one verse of one song of the debut album. It's pretty remarkable.
Well, I was thinking about the line in the second half of the verse that we played about, true this, the streets school us to spend our money foolish.
Mm, there it is. I mean, he's acknowledging it, right? For those who say, oh, Jay-Z is glorifying a lifestyle, at the very beginning, he's deconstructing it. If you look at Clint Eastwood and Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven, which is a Western, but it's a demythologization and a deconstruction of the Western, even as it constitutes one of the iconic figures and gestures within the genre. So he's both embracing it to undermine it. Jay-Z is acknowledging the life of the streets, even as he's challenging the logic of it, the foolishness of it, the impulse to do things with it that are passing and that don't have a long lasting consequence, because he knows that there are very few plans of retirement in the hustling life on the street. And yet later on, when we see him talking about generational wealth and the like, he begins mm-hmm. with this very verse to build towards something that is beyond the foolish spending that is encouraged within the hustling life.
But so, Professor Dyson, let me ask you, how much is what you're actually getting at sort of a foundational truth about hip hop as a whole, right? That through you know, the metaphors and the poetic lyricism from the start, there was truth telling being told in a particular, it's sort of a modernized version of an American tradition. So what separates Jay-Z from what's at the core of hip hop from the beginning?
Well, he does it, but he does it better. He does it, but he does it more ingeniously, right? I mean, you're absolutely right. The genre itself has produced extraordinary density, and I mean that in a good sense. Multiple layers of allusion, self-reference, a kind of braggadocio, metaphor, metonymy, simile, analogy, all the poetic tools of trade that any great poet, Rita Dove or Langston Hughes or Gwendolyn Brooks or Robert Frost or Walt Whitman would deploy, he's doing it, and yet he's doing it to a beat. Langston Hughes didn't have to rhyme to a beat. Robert Frost didn't stand except the internal meter of the particular foot of verse he was reciting or writing didn't have to match the cadence of an externally imposed musical selection that had to ride with the beat and the rhythm of the song. That's what he's doing, and he's doing it with panache, and he's doing it with style and flourish and confidence.
Well, we're talking with Professor Michael Eric Dyson. His new book is Jay-Z, Made in America. We'll have a lot more when we come back, but let's head into the break with Jay-Z's 1998 song, Hard Knock Life. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. We don't take over, we ball blocks. Burn them down and you can have it back, daddy. I'd rather that. I float for chicks wishing. They ain't have to strip to pay tuition. I see your vision, mama. I put my money on the long shots. All my ballers, that's born the clock. No one will be on top, whether I perform or not. I went from lukewarm to hot. Sleeping on futons and cots. The king size, green machines, the green fives, the scene pies. Let the thing between my eyes analyze life's ills. Then I put it down tight grill. I'm tight grill with the phony rappers. Y'all might feel we homies. I'm like still, y'all don't know me. I'm tight grill. When my situation ain't improving, I'm trying to murder everything moving. Feel me?
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Domino, domino. I only spot a few blacks the higher I go. What's up, Will? Shout out to O. That ain't enough. We gonna need a million more.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
I'm all dressed up with nowhere to go.
Yeah, it's all messed up when it's nowhere to go. So we won't take the time out till we reach the T.O.P. For parolees, the OGs, so keys, low keys. We like the promised land of the OGs in the past. If you picture events like a black tie, what's the last thing you expect to see? Black guys, what's the last?
That is Kanye West, obviously, along with Jay-Z from the 2011 album Watch the Throne. The song is Murder to Excellence, and we are talking this hour about Jay-Z. Professor Michael Eric Dyson joins us. He's written a new book called Jay-Z Made in America, where he makes the passionate argument that Jay-Z is one of the greatest poets of the American tradition, one of the greatest lyricists in hip-hop, and what that means about the message that Jay-Z's had for the better part of 30 years. And we want to hear from you. What do you make of Jay-Z's music, his influence on hip-hop, on culture? Okay, Professor Dyson, this song, Murder to Excellence, why is that an important one?
Well, here is both Jay-Z and his compatriot, Mr. Kanye West, reflecting on the vicious consequences of neighbor-to-neighbor violence, called black-on-black crime. But we know that, you know, 93% of black people who are murdered by black people. But we also know that 84% of white people who are murdered by white people. We don't have an extant discourse of white-on-white crime. We see it as the vicious consequences that are arbitrary and contingent. You live in a neighborhood, you have certain circumstances, but we don't map it according to ethnicity or race. And yet, with African-American people, that black-on-black, you know, nomenclature exists. And so they tackle it by talking about it from within. They start with Dan Roy Henry, who was murdered by police unfairly, unjustly, tragically. And then they wade out into, you know, the consequences of black people hurting each other and what the consequences of that are, and putting it in a broader context that looks at social distress and disease as the spur to that. And they want to shift from murder to black excellence, embracing black people. But he talks about the domino. And on the domino, the higher up you go, the fewer blacks you see, because the white spots begin to increase. And his point is, Oprah Winfrey and Will Smith, we're going to need more than you. We're going to need more than those figures representing at the top. So they both are pointing to the internal consequences of neighbor-to-neighbor devastation and violence and decimated communities and enclaves of civic horror called ghettos and slums. But they're also holding to account structural prohibitions against flourishing in the legitimate and so-called above-ground society.
Okay, so much to talk about, Professor Dyson. But since you mentioned Oprah, I want to play a moment that you actually reference in your book as well, an interview that Jay-Z did with Oprah back in 2009. And there's a moment in that interview where Oprah tells Jay-Z directly that she does not like rap or hip hop because of the misogyny in a lot of the lyrics and the use of the N-word. And then she asks Jay-Z to explain why he thinks it's okay to use the word. And here's what he tells Oprah.
Words. People give words power.
Yeah.
You know, and for our generation, what we did was we took the word and we took the power out of that word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we turned a word that was very ugly and hurtful into a term of endearment. So, I mean, even when someone says it, there's still intention behind what you say.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty much took the power out of the word. Because if we just start removing words from the dictionary, just make up another word the next day. So we don't address the problem. The problem is racism. Right? That's really the problem.
So we disagree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oprah Winfrey and Jay-Z back in 2009. Now, Professor Dyson, why did you cite this interview? What does it tell you about Jay-Z a decade ago?
Well, he's very smart. He's very sharp. He's very insightful. He's going up against one of the titans of American media in Oprah Winfrey, a remarkable, ingenious woman herself who came from nothing in Mississippi to become a billionaire, a multi-billionaire, and a woman who has revolutionized American consciousness around certain aspects of blackness. So he's sitting there, you know, in conversation with her, explaining both his love of Homer and his love of the Iliad, his love of epic poetry, his love of Gary Zukav and the Seat of the Soul, his love of Malcolm Gladwell and taking 10,000 hours to create real expertise and mastery, and also the N-word and why N-I-G-G-E-R is different than N-I-G-G-A, and trying to explain to her that many African-American people in hip hop have drained the word of its poisonous intentionality from a white supremacist mind view and worldview, and then using it and circulating it in part as a term of endearment. We know that there are multiple meanings to the N-word is used among African-American people, and some of them match the derision and the hatefulness that the original term evoked. But it didn't begin with hip hop. It began long before. And I suspect he could have an enriched dialogue with Ms. Winfrey about the fact that hip hop ain't the first people who started, black people who started using the N-word like that. There were people on the slave plantation who did the same thing. So there's an honored tradition, a hoary tradition, if you will, of African-American people taking that term and refusing the dominant white supremacist society to own it. snatching it back bit by bit and letter by letter to insist that we will use it in our own fashion and not be demonized by a word that you exercise power over us with.
Well, let's go to our callers really quickly. Let's go to Susan, who's calling from Milwaukee. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I've always had a lot of respect for Jay-Z just because I read the book that he wrote, his autobiography, a few years ago, and he was incredibly truthful. He talked about the fact that two of his siblings are dead, his sister and his brother, at a young age, about his hustle on the street, and he's incredibly, incredibly talented. And even though I am an oldster and I'm going to be 70 in March, I live in Milwaukee, and here it's a very heavily segregated city. And I'm glad that Jay-Z feels that he has the right and the privilege to say what he has to say and be truthful about his life and how far he's come.
Mm. Well, Susan, thank you so much for your call. So she brought up the story of the hustle that Jay-Z's mm-hmm. life and music embodies. I want to talk with you in detail about that, Professor Dyson, but let's get a little bit more of the music in here. This is from 1997, In My Lifetime, Volume 1. The track is Streets Is Watching.
Streets Is Watching. Check it. Check. Check.
If I shoot you, I'm brainless. But if you shoot me, then you're famous. What's it to do when the streets is watching? Blocks keep clocking, waiting for you to break. Make your first mistake, can't ignore it. That's the fastest way to get extorted. But my time is money, and 25, I can't afford it. Beef assorted like the diver.
Streets is watching, that's Jay-Z from 1997. Now, Professor Dyson, you make the argument right up in the beginning of the book, and I'm just going to read a line here where you say, it should be clear that Jay-Z is America at its scrappy, brash, irreverent, soulful, ingenious best. He is a transcendent cultural icon as Frank Sinatra, as adventurous, a self-made billionaire, as Mark Zuckerberg, as gifted a poet as Walt Whitman. When we say Jay-Z, we glimpse the powerful silhouette of American ambition sketched against the canopy of national striving. When we hear Jay-Z, we listen to the incomparable tongue of American democracy expressed by a people too long held underfoot. So talk about the hustle and how he embodies it.
Yeah. You know, a conservative colleague of mine, a professor at a university I taught at, University of Pennsylvania, Professor Walter McDougall, makes the argument that hustling is the central motif of American society, that American history can be summed up with the scofflaws and those on the take. On the one hand, the negative meaning of hustling, but the positive meaning, on the make, always coming up with a new idea, a new scheme, trying to figure out a new business, a new engineering concept, a new marketing plan, a new publicity one, some new invention that will, you know, express and articulate the American soul. And that's what Jay-Z has done. He's done both. He was on the streets hustling, selling crack cocaine in what Mike Davis calls the political economy of crack. His back was against the wall. Now all my teachers couldn't reach me and my mama couldn't beat me hard enough to match the pain of my pop not seeing me. So with that disdain in my membrane, got on my pimp game, blanked the world, my defense came. So father absence and existential misery and economic suffering forced him into the streets to sell drugs in order to make a way out of no way. And then he, of course, has become hip hop's first billionaire. So his hustling ethic is at the heart of American culture, a quintessentially American move where many legitimate businesses begin in crime. You know, running moonshine in the backwoods of Appalachia leads to political dynasties in Massachusetts. So the reality is that Jay-Z is quintessentially American. And people say, well, how can you write a book about a guy who sells drugs? They write books about founding fathers who sold human beings. So selling human beings has not delegitimated totally those ingenious figures who were at the heart of our founding. Neither should it delegitimize a man who began in the streets but who has risen to iconic status globally, not only in America, but around the world.
Well, and also the thing that Okay, I'll say I was a little dubious before we started diving into your book, but I think you've brought me around, Professor Dyson, because really importantly, as you point out, he's also telling this story as a black man, right? And the success that the hustle brought him. But of course, for every Jay-Z, there are 10 million other people who've hustled.
Come on. Yes. Who have been hustled on, who've been bamboozled, who've been hoodwinked, right? Think about Jay-Z's song, and we didn't even, I didn't even talk about it in the book. I might have mentioned it. Young Black and, I think it's Young Gifted and Black. I'm America's worst nightmare. I'm young, black, and holding my testicles like, yeah. Y'all was in the pub having a light beer. I was at the club having a fight there. Y'all can go home, husband and wife there. My mama at work trying to buy me the right gear. 9 years old, uncle lost his life here. I grew up thinking life ain't fair. How can I get a real job? China white right here. Right in front of my sight like here, yeah. There's your ticket out the ghetto. Take flight right there. China white, a particular kind of what? You know, cocaine he could sell. Sell me. You go bye-bye here. Damn. There's a different set of rules we abide by here. You need a gun. Negroes might drive by here. Y'all having fun racing all your hot rides here. Downloading all our music on your iPods there. I'm Chuck D standing in the crosshairs here. Y'all straight chicks got horsehair here. Y'all ain't got to be in fear of y'all bosses there. You lose your job, you're pop rich. Y'all don't care. So I don't care. Y'all acting like y'all don't hear. All the screams from the ghetto, all the teens ducking metal here. So they steam like a kettle here. Trying to take their mind to a whole different level here. Yeah, we real close to devil here. Gotta be a better way. Somebody call a reverend here. Y'all must really be in heaven there. Somebody tell God that we got a couple questions here. My little cuz never got to see his seventh year, and I'm so used to pain that I ain't even shed a tear. My God, this is Dickens with low slung jeans and crack in his hand, trying to tell the story of the immiseration socially that we've been subject to. This is William Julius Wilson speaking sociologically about the outmigration of resources and peoples from an internal colony of suffering and hurt and pain of African-American people left to their own devices without the willful intervention of the state. That's what this guy is bringing to us. How dare anyone try to dismiss the legitimate mastery of both rhetoric and social analysis that this man has exhibited throughout his career.
Okay, so the social analysis part then talk us through how you see sort of the responsibility that people are putting on Jay-Z now as a quintessentially successful black man in America. I'm thinking about the backlash, right, that happened when he partnered with the NFL to help advise on the NFL in selecting performances for the Super Bowl, for example.
Right. Well, yeah, but we got to talk about what he did before then, right? We got to talk about the film he made on Kalief Browder, the young man who was sent to Rikers Island, awaiting trial, never occurred, 3 years there because he couldn't pay bail. He got stuck there, abused by both law enforcement personnel there and by his fellow prisoners, and he was innocent of the crime that he was accused of, he maintained. And when he got out, he killed himself when he could no longer flee his demons. How about the film he made on Trayvon Martin? How about the criminal justice reform movement he has spearheaded, the Reform Alliance group that he has created with a fellow billionaires? How about, the op-eds he's written in the New York Times and Time Magazine about the war on drugs and so on and so forth? So there's a lot of stuff he's done. How about his song where he says, Bin Laden been happening in Manhattan. Back crack was anthrax back then, back when police was Al-Qaeda to black men, comparing terrorism to the vicious policing of black culture. Then you get the NFL deal where some people are quite upset, and I can understand it. But Jay-Z, first of all, identifies with and did identify with Colin Kaepernick, wore a jersey, said in a song that he recorded with Beyonce, his brilliant wife, the greatest entertainer in the world today. Look, tell the NFL, we in stadiums, too. We don't need you. And then when he's because he protested and they felt that protest. And when the, arguably the most iconic figure within hip hop says something about you, you got to listen. So they invite him in to talk. And what he does, he tries to leverage his inside status by talking about justice, not just songs at the halftime of the Super Bowl, but what programs can we animate to make justice more real. And, by the way, let's give Colin Kaepernick a tryout.
Well,
now,
but,
that
but
became
Professor,
a fiasco,
Professor
but
Dyson,
it was a tryout.
I just want to jump in here. We have about 30 seconds before we have to take a quick break. But you know that Jay-Z's critics were like, this is the hustle in service of capitalism, not in service of social justice. That was
But he was a capitalist from the very beginning. He ain't changed. What you just woke up and understood? He was a capitalist when he did all that great stuff that you love, bailing out processors for Black Lives Matter.
Michael Eric Dyson joins us this hour. He's a professor of sociology at Georgetown University. His new book is called Jay-Z, Made in America. We'll have a lot more when we come back, but we've got to head into a break here. So let's do that with the 2001 album, The Blueprint. This is Jay-Z's track, Izzo. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. H to the Izzo. B to the Izzo. Not guilty, y'all got to feel me. H to the Izzo, B to the Izzo. That's the anthem, get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture, to let them know what looking it look like when we're in a roaster. Show them how to move in a room full of vultures. Industry shady, you need to be taken over. Label owners hate me, I'm raising the status quo up. I'm overcharged for looking at what they did to the Cold Crush. Pay us like you owe us for all the years that you hold us. We can talk, but money talk, so talk more. H to the Izzo, B to the Izzo. Push Izzo, my nizzle used to dribble down in VA. H to the Izzo, B to the Izzo. That's the anthem, get your damn hands up. H to the Izzo, B to the Izzo. Not guilty, y'all got to feel me. H to the Izzo, B to the Izzo. That's the anthem, get your damn hands up.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Sure, I ponied up a meal, but I didn't give my time. So in reality, I didn't give a dime or a damn. I just put my monies in the hands of the same people that left my people stranded. Nothing but a bandit, left them folks abandoned. Damn, money that we gave, it just a band-aid. Kids say we're better off than we was before. In synopsis, this is my minority report. Can't say we're better off than we was before. In synopsis, this is my minority report.
That's Jay-Z's 2006 track Minority Report from his album Kingdom Come. We're talking this hour with Michael Eric Dyson. He's a professor of sociology at Georgetown University, and his new book is Jay-Z, Made in America. Let's go to our callers. Andre is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Andre, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing today? I'm trying to make my comments as brief as possible. I know I got limited time. All I would like to say is this. I do not, and with all due respect to Dr. Dyson, I don't think that Jay-Z lyrics are all that deep. And we can use all the 10, 15-letter words we want to try to make his lyrics sound more thought-provoking than they really are. I'm talking about all his lyrics because during this session, obviously, you're highlighting his positive stuff. I've been listening to Jay-Z since the early 90s, and most of his lyrics, especially back then, starting out, which just says any other rapper, rapper, as far as rapping about drugs, violence against their own people. And the fact of the matter is Jay-Z was just got lucky, in my opinion. But as far as the message overall body of work, especially in the beginning, is no different than many of these other gangster rappers. But my main issue with Jay-Z is that when he first began, and actually up until, I'll say, the mid-2000s, I personally heard him on interviews bragging on the fact that he started his career and got his money for his career selling drugs against his own to his own people in Brooklyn, because I doubt very seriously he sold it in Little Italy or Lower Manhattan.
Andre, don't hang up. Stay with me, okay? Because this is actually the conversation I want to hear between you and Professor Dyson, to be honest. So, Professor Dyson, Andre said a bunch of things here. Let's first start with his first criticism, which he doesn't buy your argument that Jay-Z is a master poet.
Well, I mean, he's got to prove the point. I'm making a point. And thank you, Andre, for engaging in conversation. And I don't use $50 words. I use $100,000 words. But thank you so much for that. I use words that are necessary to talk about when we talk about great poets. When I talk about metaphor, that ain't no $50 word. I'm trying to get specific about the particular tool that he's deploying there. So I'm using words to try to talk about his poetry in the same way we talk about the Iliad or Whose Woods These Are by Robert Frost or We Real Cool by Gwendolyn Brooks. And I'm saying you've got to prove your point. I've made a point, I think a compelling point, about his very beginning of his career. This is from his very beginning of his career when he says, we used to fight for building blocks. Now we fight for blocks with buildings that make a killing. The closest of friends when we first started, but grew apart as the money grew and soon grew black-hearted. Thinking back when we first learned to use rubbers, he never learned. So in turn, I'm kidnapping his baby's mother. My hand around her collar, feet in her cheese. She said the taste of dollars was ishy, so I fed her 50s. About his whereabouts, I wasn't convinced. I kept feeding her money till her crap started to make sense. I mean, brother, you can be mad at Jay-Z. You can talk about why he was elevating the level of hustling to an art form, but don't deny the ingenuity of the use of language and metaphor and allusion that he was competent in addressing. I've made my point. Mm-hmm. You've got to show me where it was rickety, where it was broken down, where it was commonsensical, where it was pedestrian, where it had no literary value. I've made a point that it is. I just don't see the counter argument. You can't just say, oh, I listened to him from the 90s and his stuff don't make sense. Give me an example. Talk to me about specific verses that indicate his lack of intelligence and understanding. Then we can speak.
Well, Andre, I know that we're putting you on the spot here, but I mean, do you want to respond?
It's not on the spot. And like I said, as far as me regurgitating his rap, I know I'm not going to do that. But what I will ask the doctor, and I don't think he can deny that, are you saying yes or no that he did not sing or rap about glamorizing the dope trade, or even in some cases, even violence against his own people? And I think this is undeniable because this came out of Jay-Z's mouth. He never really apologized for it. He always. Now, he hasn't done it lately because he's in the mainstream and he goes to the president, so he's kind of calmed down. But and from, I'm going to say, maybe up to the mid-2000s, he would routinely remind people, I guess this was to keep his street cred, that he sold crack, sold dope in Brooklyn. And the fact of the matter is, as an African-American, and he did that. This is for his words. As an African-American who's in the criminal justice system, talking about myself, who works with kids and who young adults in West Baltimore. And I hear it from kids all the time who we try to get out of the dope game in Baltimore. Hear it all the time. Every so often they would say, hey, you know, nothing wrong with doing it. You can be like Jay-Z. And once you make enough money, then I stop and I become a rapper. I invest my money. They are actually kids that look up to that in cities of Baltimore, Philadelphia.
I understand that. But let me jump in right quick. On his first album, he had a song called Regrets. Are you familiar with that? He literally says that in order to do what he's doing as a drug dealer, and he's interrogating the internal contradictions between, on the one hand, reaping enormous financial benefit from the situation, and he's acknowledging what you're saying, but he's saying also that he destroyed lives. He's saying it, and he's saying you have to learn. He says, beads of sweat, second thoughts on my mind, how can I ease the stress and learn to live with these regrets? Then he has a song on the second album where he says, you must love me, I was nothing, I was horrible, I destroyed you through the crack that I sold, and you still showed me love and value, and what I did, I was an animal, he says. So, sir, Jay-Z agrees with you. What he's doing is doing what The Godfather did, one and two. He's internally expressing doubt and suspicion about the nature of what his pursuit is. He's showing that it's inevitable for so many people to do it, but he's also talking about the enormous guilt that he has at the same time. So here's a piece of work, a piece of art that tries to characterize the moral impetus and ethical impulse of the people locked in those situations about what you speak, and then speaking about the internal contradictions of what's left there. That's what we can ask of art, is to acknowledge the contradictions. He does what you say. He doesn't simply glamorize it. He talks about its consequences that are negative. He talks about, and to cut you, he says, listen to this. Y'all acting like I told y'all to sell crack. No, Hov did that, so hopefully you won't do that. That's exactly what he's saying.
Well, Andre, I've got to move on to talk about another aspect of Jay-Z's music, but I cannot thank you enough for calling in. Andre from Baltimore, Maryland,
thank you, Andre.
Thank you so much for your call. Because, I mean, I love that he called in, because we have to talk about, if we're talking about how powerful and masterful and influential Jay-Z is, Andre's bringing us, you know, his concerns about the nature of that influence on the young, very young people he works with. So I really appreciate that call.
No, now, it's very important. That's why it was important for me to also to answer, to show you the contradiction, the conflict. It wasn't a simple glamorization or glorification. It was every step of the way a sense of guilt. He then calls himself an animal for doing what he did. He narrates that on record, and he begins to interrogate the internal dimensions of his regret, even as he talks about millions of people who are coerced into a life of criminality, of hustling, and the consequences that are doled out to them.
Okay, so let's talk about another, I would say, belated aspect of Jay-Z's self-interrogation here. And in so doing, I'm going to start with this track.
Mm-hmm. You hurt yourself. Try not to hurt yourself. Will you play me? You play yourself. Yourself. You lie to me. You lie to yourself. You're only lying to yourself.
Beyoncé, 2016 Lemonade. That's Don't Hurt Yourself, of course. The album as a whole, a gigantic eye-opener, to say the least, about Jay-Z, her husband. And so here's then what Jay-Z put out in 2017. This is 444.
I apologize. Orphan woman eyes. Took for my child to be born. See through a woman's eyes. Took for these natural twins to believe in miracles. Took me too long for this song. I don't deserve you.
Jay-Z in 2017, 444. Now, okay, Michael Eric Dyson, those two albums together, what do you think?
They're powerful. She doesn't name Jay-Z on the album. So it threatened to become the greatest diss album of all time, because who the cap fit wear it, and who fits the shoe wear that as well. How many men could have lemonade made about them? At least raspberry tea, maybe some chamomile as well. So the point is, oh, some other politician pops up today. Oh, yes, I cheated on my wife. Is that Bill Clinton? Is that Brother Mark from, you know, South Carolina? I mean, man, a bunch of men who didn't have tough backgrounds, who have been implicated in toxic masculinity, as many of us are. And yes, he matured. And yes, he went from Big Pimpin', or even from Song Cry. I can't see him coming down my eye, so I make the song cry, where he is clinically dispassionate and distant from the suffering that he endures, both from his own poor choices and from having cheated on, and then in turn being cheated on by a woman. So the reality is that Jay-Z has evolved, and you know, there's no question that Lemonade, a brilliant album that even Adele asked, what does Beyonce have to do in order to win the ultimate awards at Grammys? Well, be white and British like you, Adele. And Adele said that the year she won it. Just as an aside, to talk about not only toxic masculinity, but about persistent white supremacy that denies the legitimacy of black artistic creation. But Jay-Z responded like a fully grown man. He admitted his therapy. He talked about his mother as being gay and lesbian. He talked about his own toxic masculinity. He spoke about his maturation as a black man, coming to grips with it. Now, some would say, how ridiculous is it that you have to have a daughter in order to understand it? Well, every man who has a daughter doesn't understand it, because there are a lot of men who got daughters and wives who treat them in horrendous fashion. So his maturation is edifying and remarkable for given his history. And yes, I think it is important that we put our fingers on the pulse of a poisonous patriarchy and toxic masculinity that all of us have to grapple with, not only in hip hop, but I preach in churches as well. And some women can't even stand up on certain pulpits because they are, you know, desacralizing that space. So misogyny, sexism, patriarchy, and a term I invented, femophobia, just the fear of women, must be dealt with, must be addressed, both in its explicit forms as in hip hop culture, and in its more subtle nuances within religious and educational circles as well. But kudos to Beyonce for calling it out. And kudos for Jay-Z for responding. By the way, they had a third album called Everything Is Love. Lemonade was the thesis. 444 was the antithesis. And Everything Is Love is the synthesis. It is a Hegelian moment in black culture in the 2010s.
I want to see if I can sneak one last quick call in here, because we're really running down on time. Emmanuel is calling from Huntsville, Alabama. Emmanuel, we've got about a minute for you, but go ahead.
Hello. Dr. Dyson is stealing all of my ammunition. Absolutely on point. What I can say is this. My favorite song is American Gangster, because it encompasses everything that Dr. Dyson was talking about. That 444 album is so misunderstood and lyrically not listened to. And that's the reason why a lot of people are hating on Jay-Z. They don't get it. They don't listen to it. They don't listen to the words. They listen to the beats, and that's it. And we're missing that. It's the same thing with poetry. If you don't read what the poet is trying to explain to you and put it into context, you will never get it.
Yeah. Well, Emmanuel, I'm going to take it back from you there, and thank you so much for your call. Emmanuel, giving you a big thumbs up there, Professor Dyson. We've got a minute left, and here's the question. I want to circle back to where we started and kind of like my disbelief that Jay-Z's actually 50 here. What about the sort of the lay of the land ahead of him, right? I mean, how many hip hop artists are there over the age of 50 that are thriving? Maybe he's gonna set the model for that.
I mean, he'll be the Tom Brady of hip hop. He'll be the LeBron James. Nas is near 50. Diddy just turned 50. As the art form matures and grows older, so do the artists. I mean, how old is Keith Richards? How old is Mick Jagger? And he's still performing? My God. Jay-Z at least has another 25 years, according to that itinerary. We need the AC/DCs in hip-hop. We need the Rolling Stones in hip-hop. Long live Jay-Z. Keep spitting those lyrics.
Michael Eric Dyson. He's a professor of sociology at Georgetown University. His new book is called Jay-Z, Made in America. We have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Professor Dyson, it was terrific to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to close with Empire State of Mind, 2009, from the Blueprint 3. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
With OG at a Yankee game, that made the Yankee hat more famous than a Yankee king. You should know I bleed blue, but I ain't a crypto. But I got a gangin' walking with my click though. Welcome to the melting pot, corners where we selling Africa been by the home of the hip hop. Yellow cap, gypsy cap, dollar cap, holla back. For foreigners, it ain't fair. They act like they forgot how to act. 8 million stories out there in the naked city. It's a pity half of y'all won't make it. Me, I got a plug special where I got it made. If Jesus paying LeBron, I'm paying Dwayne Wade. 3 dice CeeLo, 3 card Marley. Labor Day parade, rest in peace, Bob Marley. Statue of Liberty, long live the World Trade, long live the King. Yo, I'm from the Empire State. That's to the